Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hello and welcome to another sparkling edition of Plank of the Week. We are back in the studio and I'm joined by Patrick Christie for the first time on Plank of the Week. Patrick, very good afternoon to you. And Emily Carver, a veteran of the Plank list from some time ago. Both I'm looking forward to today because not only are you possibly young enough to be my children, you're possibly young enough to be my grandchildren, which is quite disturbing, really. But listen, Patrick, since you are here for the first time, I think we should give you the honours to kick us off with your first Plank of the Week.
All right, well, I couldn't narrow it down to one person. I've gone for universities.
Right, okay? That sounds good to me.
they've always annoyed me. Most of my friends got a 2-1. I got a first in cirrhosis of the liver when I was there. But the big news this week is that unis are going to continue to charge the full 9,250 quid annual tuition fees, even if campuses remain closed and there's no face-to-face classes, which I think is... It's taking the mick a little bit. The average wage of a vice chancellor is 253 grand a year as well. So they're not short of a quid or two. But look, I mean, there are some ridiculous courses out there. You can do David Beckham studies at Staffordshire University. You can do brewing and distilling at Heriot Watt University and contemporary circus and physical performance at Bath Spa. So that's worth the 9,250 quid a year.
Well,
I don't know who ever thought that if you said to these universities, you know, you can charge anything you like up to £9,000, that they wouldn't all just go, okay, 9,000 quid it is then, Patrick.
Exactly. So 75% of all English universities, this is in 2018, and this figure has gone up now, but... they are charging the absolute maximum. But the fact as well is, and this is the thing, that you come out of university, you know, with just a lifetime of debt. You've got 17 billion quid is loaned to students every single year, and most of that gets put straight down their throat. You know, so 121 billion quid of outstanding loans just to go to university and come out with a Desmond.
And also, presumably now at the moment, Emily, there's not a lot of point in coming out of university at all, is there? Because there's not going to be any jobs. There's not going to be any work to do. So, I mean, unless you're planning to stay at university for the rest of your life, I wouldn't bother going.
I think we've got to blame Tony Blair, really, for saying that 50% of people should go to university. I mean, most people think, why?
Yes.
Don't they, really?
Well, they really do. And the other thing that they say about Tony Blair is, why does he keep popping up on the news to tell us what to do? Does he not realise that nobody's interested in what he's got to say anymore?
Oh yeah, the great virologist Tony Blair.
Absolutely right. So let's have your first one, Emily. Who are you going for?
So I'm going to go for lefty commentator, Jeremy Corbyn fan Owen Jones.
Oh yes.
This week he's got to be my top plank, I think. Mainly for his stupid and incredibly cynical attempt to smear Michael Gove and his wife Sarah Vine based on their book collection.
Yes.
Now I'm not sure if everyone watching will have been following his social media and the media that's come out of it. But essentially what happened was Michael Gove was giving his daily briefing to the news and Sarah Vine was at home. She took a little snap. Her bookshelf was behind Gove. And there was a book by a Holocaust denier, David Irving. And so Owen went straight onto Twitter and said and accused them of defending hard right ideology because he had this book on his shelf. And let's bear in mind that he had, what, 200 other books up there?
Yeah.
Hundreds of books. He had a huge collection. And I mean, this is pretty ironic coming from Owen Jones, who tried his darndest to get Jeremy Corbyn, who's been accused of being an anti-Semite, or at least of allowing anti-Semitism to become rife in the party. I mean, they're still under investigation by the Equalities and Human Rights Commission. And Owen Jones is trying to accuse Michael Gove, who has been one of the biggest voices. If you know anything about Michael Gove, you'll know that he is anti-Semitic anti-Semitism as much as anyone could be. So absolute plankish behaviour, yeah. And so cynical. I think that he's just a bit upset that he's not getting the media attention he used to.
Well, I do wonder, Patrick, whether Owen Jones spends his entire life with a microphone, with a magnifying glass, you know, looking at all the people that are on TV with bookcases behind them, looking for anything that he can pick up. And clearly, he made a massive blunder here, didn't he?
Oh, he absolutely did. But I mean, I think it says more about Owen Jones, certainly, than it does about Michael Gove's book collection. You'd be pleased to see, Mike, as well, that I've got no books behind me here. You know that I don't read. So it would just be several copies of Wayne Rooney's autobiography, although I have a rather fruity number about that period that Germany doesn't like to talk about. So we might have done that. But no, look, I think it says more about Owen Jones than anything else, didn't it, really? And of course, you're allowed to read stuff that you disagree with. Right. In fact, it helps.
Are you? Oh, I thought that had been outlawed by the left. I thought you weren't allowed to do that anymore.
This is it, isn't it? I mean, does he just want just, you know, the relentless kind of right wing books that are there? Michael Gove can't deviate whatsoever from what his political ideology is. No, of course, you're allowed to read stuff that you don't agree with. That's the rules.
I mean, I remember going back to the beginning of this whole bookcase gate where Dominic Raab, I think, was the guy, was he not, who clearly had just, you know, sort of mocked up what he would have on his bookcase behind him because it was like a book about economic theory, which nobody's got, right? Some other rubbish about something, some international, you know, this disparate place that nobody had ever heard of. And clearly somebody had actually gone through his book collection and gone, yeah, put that one there, that one over there, yeah, that one. You know, I mean, I've had conversations with people at the office here that when you're in some kind of Zoom meeting, the trick is to put some kind of clue down as to how you really live and what you're really like. You know, one of our bosses had an arcade gaming machine behind him and everyone was like, wow, that's the coolest thing we've ever seen. You know, but there were suggestions that you could have an old copy of Fiesta magazine lying about that you'd forgotten so people could see just to wind a few people up because, you know, there are people, I'm sure, like Owen Jones out there who do nothing but just look for some kind of, you know, wrong thing that's in the picture and so they can make fun of you.
I was just going to say that even more plankish is that this has become a sort of hot media debate now, yeah, on BBC, and they brought in lots of different commentators to sort of defend Owen. And there was a woman who was on BBC News, and I don't know actually who she was, but she was saying, you know, you can read the books, but you must put them away afterwards. That's the right thing to do. And it's sort of like, what?
I mean, we often get asked the question, what has gone wrong with the media in this country? And this is exactly what's gone wrong with it. They all think that everyone in the country sits in a study with books in it. I mean, have they never been to parts of the north of England where people live, you know, rather less salubrious lives and they actually don't have a study, never mind a bloody bookcase to put books in? You know, they sit there trying their best to get by with their job, which doesn't pay them very much money, and their kids who quite annoy them, and their wife who they don't really like very much, you know, and they're not sitting there reading, you know, copies of James Joyce's bloody Ulysses, are they?
Sounded a bit close to home, that one, Mike, I'll be honest. I did have the bookshelf, but since lockdown, I've had to burn them all for warmth. So you know, that's the way it's going.
Well, I mean, presumably that'll be Owen Jones' next idea. Let's burn all the books by people we don't agree with. Oh, no, that's already been tried. I'm going to go stick it with the lefty plan, I'm afraid. I have to pick Emma Kennedy, not just in deference to my colleague Dan Wootton, but just because she is the most unbelievable plank I think I've ever seen. That comes as no surprise to me. That it turns out she's trained as a lawyer. Some of the thickest people currently on social media are trained as either lawyers or barristers. Jolyon Moron, for one. There's that other woman whose name I forget who's blocked me. The secret barrister blocked me after he accused me of libelling him. I had to point out to him that he's a secret barrister, therefore he has no reputation, therefore he cannot actually be libelled. So then he blocked me. And I'm going, you people are supposed to be clever, right? Emma Kennedy complained to Talk Radio and to Dan Wootton that he had somehow libelled her by saying that she suffered from Boris derangement syndrome, because if you remember, only a week or so ago, Boris Johnson wasn't turning up to Prime Minister's questions, and all the lefties went nuts and said, this is a disgrace, he's hiding from scrutiny, he won't come out in front and centre of government, he's all right now, why is he hiding? Then it turned out he wasn't actually hiding, he was waiting for the birth of his child, which is a pretty good excuse not to go to Prime Minister's questions, right? So she then had put out a tweet which was rather unkind to him, which she then recanted and deleted. But Dan Wootton quite rightly went on the radio and had a go at her. She went from complaining to Ofcom to consulting representing a law firm, Carter Rux, one of the worst and most disgraceful law firms in the world when you're talking about free press, then threatening all sorts of legal action to literally to reverse ferreting herself in the space of about 4 hours to saying, I'm not going to bother with you anymore, you're not worth it, and therefore just walked away and then decided to block every single person that works for Tory Edge. Blocked me. I've never even tweeted her. Right. I went to and she started blocking. She even blocked the producer of the show, who had had no interaction with her at all, apart from asking her to send an email of complaint if she wished to complain. I mean, you know, the woman's absolutely and utterly bonkers.
Well, I mean, this just shows, doesn't it? It just shows that this is all they've got left. Some of these sort of lefties, you know, they lost the argument during the election. And now
they won the argument, to be fair. I mean, they do say that they did win the argument.
The whole winning the argument thing is something that I like to say to the girlfriend shortly before I sleep on the front lawn. So, you know, it's like, I won the argument. Yeah, but you are outside, aren't you? But look, I think it's just symptomatic, isn't it, of the quite bizarre lack of tolerance, a kind of hypocritical lack of tolerance that you see from the left, really, whereby if someone disagrees with you, even if you've got what is overtly a controversial opinion about something, then their response is to just block you, shut you down, ignore you, ostracize you. Well, that's not the way the world works, I'm afraid.
Or to try and get you fired. I mean, they'll spend an entire day having a go at you. And as soon as you say something back, that's racist or sexist or, you know, he must be immediately fired from his job. Unbelievable stuff. Let's get on to your second one, Patrick. What is it?
Okay, all right. The Electoral Commission.
Oh, yes.
So I'm getting stuck into this lot. They're not fit for purpose. So they referred Aaron Banks and Leave.eu to the National Crime Agency. They foster these allegations, of course, that Aaron Banks, Leave.eu, essentially had Russian snow on their boots when it came to the money and the funding for Brexit. The claim was that they'd use this undeclared, unaccounted for foreign money in order to kind of infiltrate the British psyche, basically, and make sure that we all vote for Brexit. But it just turns out the money all came from Mr. Banks, which you'd have thought if you just went through his accounts, you would have been able to see. And it's not the first time that Elcom's been in hot water. There was, of course, the Darren Grimes incident as well. The courts overturned a 20 grand fine for him after they claimed that he'd broken the rules. Spoiler alert, he hadn't. And it took a judge just 2 hours to throw the case out. So they just simply can't get their heads around, really, the fact that most people would just want to, of their own free will, vote for Brexit. I mean, they're on 80 million quid a year is Elcom's budget. And I think it's probably fair to say they're about as good as seeing what's right in front of them as Stevie Wonder in a dark room.
Yes, I think that's absolutely right. Emily, it seems extraordinary. I was watching, funnily enough, for the first time just the other night. This is how bored I am. I watched the Brexit, the movie, right? With old Cumberbatch in it, right? Which actually was a lot better than I thought it was. But right at the end, the closing credits come and it's got one of those kind of, you know, mystery endings where the words come up, you know, leave.uk or whatever it was called, were referred to the Electoral Commission shortly after the referendum result was laid bare, and they have now been reported and are facing criminal charges. And then it ends. They don't add in the bit that actually they were then cleared of all the charges, which I really think they should add on, because if you're watching that film now, you're left with the impression that they're still facing charges, which I think is pretty rotten, really, don't you?
Well, yeah, I do, and I think the Electoral Commission has a lot to answer for, to be honest. I mean, the way they treated Darren Grimes, who's a good friend of mine, I mean, it was outrageous. How old was he? He was, what, 22 when he had to go through this investigation? And he had done nothing wrong. And it's awful. And it's just the establishment, we use that word a lot, but they still can't seem to get to grips with the idea that the people just wanted to leave the European Union. It's as simple as that. Get over it. And they're still talking about it now, aren't they? They're saying, oh, with this coronavirus, this proves that we shouldn't leave the European Union. I mean, the European Union have dealt with this virus really appallingly on the whole. They were so slow to react. And I mean, it's just farcical now, isn't it, really?
Well, I think by the time December rolls around, there literally will be no European Union to leave. It will just be a sort of a rotten carcass lying on the beach at Calais, having been eaten to death by a few sort of rabid wolves, because there's literally no money left.
I couldn't agree more. I think we got out when we needed to, to be honest.
I mean, Patrick, I mean, I can't say I miss the EU. I can't even say that I miss arguing about the EU, but I'm really looking forward to the end of the EU, quite frankly.
Absolutely. I mean, I think rejoining the EU or delaying Brexit now would just be like walking back into a building that's already on fire, wouldn't it? Why would you do that? You know, the way they've just thrown Italy under the bus yet again. They've had three major crises to deal with the European Union recently. They've had the migrant crisis, Brexit, and of course, coronavirus. And they've managed to mess them all up. I mean, I don't really see, you know, and also this is the other thing. If we rejoin, or not rejoin, but if we delay Brexit, then we could end up being liable potentially for some kind of COVID relief fund.
Yes.
That could be about 1.5 trillion euros.
Right.
Well, I'm not paying to clean up Ursula von der Leyen's mess, thank you very much. I think we can sort that out ourselves, can't we?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. What's your second one, Emily?
It's kind of related to the EU. I mean, my second plank of the week is Emma Thompson, who was an absolute lover of all things EU. We all remember what she said about the UK. I've got it quoted here. She said, she called Britain a tiny little cloud-bolted rainy corner of sort of Europe, a cake-filled, misery-laden, grey old island. That's what she called us.
All the best,
anyway,
Emma. Thanks anyway.
So she set off straight to Venice, lovely Venice. We'd all like to spend some time there. Anyway, couple days later, after getting her citizenship, she decided to get on a plane back to Blighty to stay with her mother up in Scotland against the COVID-19 quarantine rules. And so after slagging off Britain, after ditching post-Brexit Britain, she's back in the UK.
Amazing woman. I mean, this is the same woman who flew all the way from Los Angeles to tell us all not to fly and said it was all right for her to do that on the grounds that she was already paying for it in some kind of carbon offsetting scam, a bit like Elton John. I mean, Patrick, it's hard to believe that these people can actually wake up and look at themselves in the mirror.
I don't understand it. They're about as tone deaf as a really rubbish X Factor audition, aren't they? How can they not see themselves? You know, it's all very well. It's like with Sam Smith crying in his £12 million Hampstead mansion. I mean, I think, where would we be, Mike? Where would we be if it wasn't for celebrities keeping us sane from their luxury multi-duplex kitchens that they've got at the moment? Thank you so much for showing me that fire pit that you've got in your garden there. This makes it all bearable.
Right.
You know, cheers, guys.
Absolutely unbelievable.
And what's more, before I forget, what was she doing? What's she been doing in Scotland? She's been starring in promotional videos for Extinction Rebellion.
Yeah, which it's actually a very nice, unbeknownst to you, a very nice link, because I'm actually putting Extinction Rebellion in as one of my planks this week. Because believe it or not, I turned up outside the office the other day and towards the back end of last week, and they had the old the sheep, netting out for people. So in case there's going to be, I said, what's going on? They're like, oh, we've been told there might be a demonstration. I'm like, why? We're in the midst of a bloody lockdown. Who's going to demonstrate outside the building? And they were like, oh, it's Extinction Rebellion. They've said that they're going to have some action over the course of the next few days, because what they want to do is make sure that as we recover from coronavirus, we don't go back to the way we were, i.e. we go further backwards into the caveman sort of way of living, where we don't have any electricity at all, we don't have any food, and we don't drive anywhere in a car. So they want everybody now to just walk around and cycle everywhere and don't eat any meat. And that's the way forward, apparently, for Extinction Rebellion. He thought it was a great idea to do away with economic growth altogether. So, I mean, I'm beginning to wonder whether Extinction Rebellion are actually behind the coronavirus, because this is the way it's going. They're taking us away from economic growth. There's no planes in the sky. There's hardly any cars on the road. And we're all going mad.
Yeah, I mean, they're saying that we don't need any economic growth. I mean, we're in the middle of a global pandemic. People are going to be losing their jobs left, right and centre. I think economic growth is exactly what we need. And we're not going to do that by banning all forms of transport, banning all ways of making a living, basically, which is essentially what they want to do, and going back to being cavemen.
Well, this is it. They've now admitted, basically, that they want to do away with capitalism, which we always suspected was their kind of aim in life anyway. But they basically said, we don't want any big companies to be able to re-employ all the people that they've put on furlough. We don't want the aviation companies to get back to normal. We're hearing about redundancies being made. I mean, these are people who are now going to be relishing the fact that loads of people are going to be unemployed and nobody's going to have any money.
Well, I actually went to one of the Extinction Rebellion rallies to interview a few of the uncooperative crusties, as Boris Johnson called them at the time. And I did quite an interesting interview with a chap in the back of a police van who was a doctor and used to be a doctor, because I just said to him, when you've got a criminal record, are you allowed to continue to practice? And he just looked at his feet and then he looked back up at me and went, well, I hadn't really thought about that. Yeah, that's right. You didn't, did you? Anyway, good luck on the job search.
I mean, it is quite remarkable. They really are quite ridiculous. But let's move on.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Patrick, your third nomination, please.
Right. Well, we've touched on this a little bit, but I'd like to get stuck back into the lefties. It's been quite a bad week for them. They got stitched up by the Tories, and Boris announced, of course, that he wouldn't be at PMQs. So MPs like Ruth Cadbury tweeted things like, "It looks like Boris has found yet another excuse to miss PMQs." Well, yeah, I mean, cradling your newborn infant in your arms just days after recovering from a life and death struggle with coronavirus is a pretty good excuse. Of course, he was as well had the revelation that Dominic Cummings actually was the one apparently trying to sort out the lockdown as opposed to stop it entirely. So when you look at it in the round, it's just been quite a bad week for the lefties, and someone that I think you might come on to as well, Mike, Mark DiStefano, yes, as well. They've not covered themselves in glory yet again.
No, exactly right. And I mean, the other one was Jeremy Corbyn, of course. Let's not forget him. I didn't think that I would miss Jeremy Corbyn, but Keir Starmer is so boring, right, that I'm actually now longing for the days of Mr. Angry standing there shaking his fist at the dispatch box. You know, when are you going to do something about this? And you go, shut up, sit down, you stupid old git. He came into Parliament, right? He's over 70. He lives in Islington. He could have quite easily zoomed in if he wanted to, like everybody else did. But oh no, he's far too important to do that. He actually believes his own publicity that he can walk on water and presumably can't die from the coronavirus because he's apparently very fit. And I mean, you know, what an absolute plank he is. So, I mean, you can include him in that set if you want. What do you reckon, Emily?
I mean, the left have been truly hysterical over the last few weeks, haven't they? They've been, you know, attacking the Prime Minister when he's just given birth, when he's just literally just survived, yeah, almost come back from death almost, and they still can't help but kick the boot in. And I think it must be because they lost so badly and the ratings are so low that this is now their modus operandi. This is how they react to bad polling, by making attacks, nasty, nasty attacks, unrepented attacks, unrepented nastiness. And it's just, it just doesn't bode well with the public, don't think.
And Patrick, haven't they also just lost their general secretary as well? Hasn't Formby disappeared off in the last couple of days, sort of quietly under the radar, just before, funnily enough, the report on anti-Semitism comes out?
I'd like to have a look at her bookshelf, wouldn't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. There's this weird thing with the left, I think, where there's so many different divided factions that actually they can't unify and mobilise in one coherent way, like you need to do at a general election, for example. And yeah, I think they've got a real struggle here. There's a credibility gap. I think there's a potential lack of competency in serious heavyweight politicians. Keir Starmer, I think, is an improvement on Corbyn in some respects, but is about as kind of engaging as the occasional table that I've got over there. He's the human skirting board, isn't he? Really,
he is.
You don't notice him. So yeah, they've got a real problem, and it's that kind of internal hypocrisy as well. They just can't seem to get over as well.
Yeah, I mean, he's another lawyer, isn't he?
At least he seemed quite genuine in, you know, congratulating the Prime Minister on his baby. I'll give him that. He was a little nicer than Jeremy Corbyn, who I don't think has yet to wish his congratulations. Surprise, surprise.
No, well, of course, Jeremy Corbyn just can't bring himself to be nice to anyone who doesn't have the same views as him. You know, he's happy to wish a happy sort of Palestinian day to the Palestinians, but he's not that keen on St. George's Day, despite the fact that he happens to live in England, where the people celebrate St. George's Day when they're English. You know, he's a very bizarre character. What's your final nomination, Emily?
I'm not sure many people will have seen this. It was on social media. Essentially, Dawn Butler decided...
God, they really are getting it in the neck, aren't they, the old lefties?
Sorry, they've just been so annoying this week. it's got to be Dawn Butler, the lovely Dawn Butler. What has she done? Well, she decided that she'd put out a little... I mean, we all remember her because she denied that biological sex existed.
Yes.
She said that babies aren't born with biological sex on Good Morning Britain, which, I mean, she's so dim. This week she's decided that she's writing an article about microaggressions on WhatsApp groups. And so she decided to ask her following whether they had any stories that they'd like to share with her about these microaggressions. And I'm just sitting here wondering, why just stick to microaggressions? Why not move to nanoaggressions as well, Dawn? I mean, it's just farcical. I don't know why she's such a plank and she keeps putting this stuff out. And I was looking through the comments that she had on this tweet, and I must say, about 99% of them were telling her how much of a plank she was.
Well, even for Twitter, that's quite a surprise, isn't it? Because I do occasionally wonder at what on earth is going on Twitter. I mean, I was on it today earlier, and Bobby Sands was trending, and I thought, Bobby Sands? What, has he come back from the dead? It turns out that it's the anniversary of his death from a hunger strike because he was a supporter of the IRA. Now, why the hell is that trending on Twitter, Patrick? I mean, I can't understand why anyone who's young, who's on Twitter, would even get into that at all.
Yeah, Luton is currently trending now, which I think is possibly quite bad news for Luton, because nothing good seems to happen there.
So, well, actually, I can tell you exactly why Luton is trending. I think it's because McDonald's have announced today that they're opening 15 outlets, right? Unfortunately for our friends in the north, they're all in the south of England. and three of them are in Luton, apparently.
All right, I'll see you in a bit then, guys.
I think there'll be a lot of people doing that. There's currently it's not opening till the 13th of May, but the queue for the drive-through has already started, I suspect.
Yeah, absolutely. Twitter is this kind of like void, isn't it, where all horrible things go to die. It's easy to end up like the people who've relentlessly been blocking you, Mike, to end up in this little echo chamber where you just think that everything's right. I do think, honestly, that Boris Johnson could post a picture on Twitter of him carrying a baby out of a burning building, and Owen Jones would still have a go at him.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It would be absolutely horrendous. Well, I'm going to go with you guys for the final off here. My final nomination is Mark DiStefano, who you mentioned earlier. Now, a lot of people might not know who Mark DiStefano is because he's a bit of a media figure. This is the guy who worked for BuzzFeed, ended up getting hired by the Financial Times. He's a massively left-wing journalist. And the Financial Times actually has become this ridiculously left-wing organ. Lionel Barber, who was their last editor, was a massive Remainer. You know, the FT used to be, when I was younger, the one paper that you could rely on to be completely and utterly without spin, without any kind of bias whatsoever. It was purely and simply written for the people who worked in the square mile of the city. And it didn't have Saturday supplements, you know, which it does now. It didn't have, you know, sort of, you know, guides to restaurants and wine and all that rubbish. It just was a paper about the financial business and about the markets. But now it's become this crazy kind of, you know, anti-business newspaper. And you just think, what is going on? I mean, these are the people, after all, who did the report into what was going on at Dorchester, if you remember. You know, the shocking news that people who were very wealthy sometimes got a bit drunk and got up to some rather rum stuff. So anyway, so DiStefano becomes this sort of hacker of people's private meetings. He started hacking into the Zoom meetings that were being held at the Independent and at the Evening Standard, which was basically an illegal act. Not only did he do it, he did it under his own name. He's that much of a plank that he actually had his name pop up as Mark DiStefano, Financial Times, when he joined the meetings. And you think, what sort of an idiot is this? And this puts me in mind of the way that people complain about journalists now and how they're trained. This guy clearly couldn't find a story if he fell over one. And I mean, he's now had to resign from the FT. But of course, he was getting all sorts of congratulations from the likes of Ash Sarkar, your friend Owen Jones, who all said, oh, what a terrible thing. That idiot, Aaron Bastardi, as I call him, he actually said to him, oh, well, we all make mistakes. Well, we certainly do, Aaron. You keep making them. And yet you've still got this secretly funded organisation that nobody knows anything about to plant ridiculous, you know, like pictures of Moscow during the communist, putch against the Jews. And you go, this is a good idea. I mean, yeah, I don't know where to stop, really.
What has annoyed me is the likes of Emily Maitlis and all these people, you know, people who are supposedly serious journalists,
yes,
coming out and going, oh, bad luck, Mark. It's not bad luck. You've just illegally hacked into a phone call of The Independent as people are getting furloughed. It's not even a story anyone cares about.
No.
If you're going to hack into something, hack into MI5.
I mean, I suppose the most surprising part about the story for me, Emily, was that there weren't even any journalists left at The Independent. I thought they'd all been fired. I thought it was produced by one man and his dog.
I mean, it's so funny, isn't it? They'll stick up for each other if they agree with them, and that's what it's all about, isn't it? I mean, you've got Lewis Goodall as well, political editor of BBC Newsnight. I mean, what are they playing at by hiring him? Why would you do that? It's just going down and downhill, and you have Owen Jones, Ash Sarkar retweeting them all the time, retweeting these BBC journalists and these supposedly neutral journalists like Mark, and it's just crazy. It's so easy to see through now we've got social media.
Yeah, it really is, because in the end, they always make the mistake which kills off their career. I can't imagine what he's going to do next, Patrick, can you?
No, this is it, isn't it? And I think that, you know, we saw the lack of public trust in journalists and broadly speaking, the media, I suppose. And I think this goes and sums it up, that they are there for each other. They're in this kind of little cliquey club that actually is a bit of a closed shop to anyone who's desperately trying to bang in from the outside. And the only people who cares about what they have to say a lot of the time and the way that they ask their questions is themselves and the fact that they might get a text from Robert Peston saying, well done, although you'd imagine that would be 4 pages long.
I was going to say, presumably a well done text from Robert Peston makes your phone burn up and die, presumably, because of the length of it.
But I mean, what's sad is that I used to think that Financial Times was, you know, completely neutral, completely factual. I used to think that BBC Newsnight was where you went for, you know, the facts and the figures. And now I don't watch it. I don't read the FT because I just don't trust it.
No, but isn't that a terrible indictment, isn't it? Because that statement you've just made used to be true. Newsnight used to be a great show. When Paxman was the guy in charge, it was a brilliant show. You wanted to watch Paxman, you know, absolutely kind of burn people, no matter who they were, because it was great fun to watch. But he was very neutral, and he would have a go at anyone. And the same goes for the FT was just a paper of record, you know. And
I saw you tweeted about Have I Got News For You.
Oh my God.
And so I decided to watch like 2 minutes of it, and it's so god awful. I mean, James O'Brien on there.
Well, if I could just show you the face that James O'Brien seems to have for almost the entire show, it's like this. I mean, who laughs like that? He hardly said anything, right? And he made that face for the first time when Paul Merton said something about a dolphin in a swimming pool. I mean, it wasn't very funny. And yet he had this kind of grimace, as if it was a rictus kind of Joker-style grin that he'd found. And it was very bizarre to watch. And also, you can't do Have I Got News For You without an audience. It doesn't work.
I reckon they were told beforehand to sort of over-exaggerate their laughs, you know, for effect. It didn't work.
No, I mean, I wasn't laughing, that's for sure. So now we've got our nine. Now, I'm going to have to say to you, as you know, that I carry one over. And I think it's probably going to have to be Harry and Meghan again this week because, you know, they have re-emerged as the king and queen of the planks. You know, they're having a birthday party for little baby Archie for his first birthday. And apparently they're not going to make him a cake with any sugar in it because obviously that's bad for you. Meghan has also said that she wants to restart her blog, which is going to be a bit like Goop, you know, the thing that Gwyneth Paltrow did, which the last thing I saw them doing was steaming other people's vaginas, which, to be honest, is not really something I'm really that keen to watch on a blog of any kind, whether it's by Gwyneth Paltrow or not. So, you know, I'm not looking forward to Meghan's blog because I don't know what she's going to be steaming, presumably Harry's head, you know, as she completely transforms him into the biggest sort of, you know, wuss in the history of the west of Hollywood. But anyway, so I'm going to ask you now to choose Patrick's best one, because Patrick, just tell us what your three nominations are again. And Emily can then choose one.
So I went universities, I went electoral commission, and I went lefties.
So Emily, which one of those do you think is the best?
I think I've got to go for the Electoral Commission.
I think that's a good choice. I think that's a very good choice.
That their bias is just...
Yeah, is it, and it's also time, I think Patrick's quite right, it's time for them to just be given a massive slap, if not shut down altogether. Patrick, why don't you choose one of mine? Emma Kennedy, Extinction Rebellion, or Mark DiStefano?
I'm going to have to go for Mark DiStefano. And, and actually, it is actually purely down to the fact that I just don't like him.
That's fair enough. I mean, there's nothing like... We have absolute transparent honesty on this show, very unlike almost any other show in the history of shows. So, Emily, tell me your three and I'll pick one.
Who were my three? I had Emma Thompson, Dawn Butler, and who's the other one? Owen Jones, of course.
Oh, yeah. I think I'm going to go for Emma Thompson because I think she is the biggest plank of the three that you've put up. So that leaves us with Emma Thompson, Mark DiStefano, and the Electoral Commission. So one of those has to go in order to get to the final two. So it's up to you guys. I mean, Patrick, who would you say is the least relevant? And remember that whoever is the least relevant still comes in at number three in the top 10 list.
Well, purely because I want Mark DiStefano to be plank of the week. I'm willing to fall on my Electoral Commission sword here and move that one out of the way.
Okay. So... Emily, would that fit in with your thinking? That would leave us with Emma Thompson versus Mark DiStefano.
Yeah, let's do that.
Should we do that?
Let's have two people.
So that's good. So Electoral Commission comes in third. So that means then it's Mark DiStefano versus Emma Thompson. It's a person this week, which is always good. What do you think, Emily?
I mean, I want to go with Emma Thompson. She's my top plank of the week this week. I mean, her eco-lovery is just too painful.
I would happily go along with that. What do you think, Patrick?
Yeah, look, absolutely. I mean, it is the battle royale, isn't it? Emma Thompson versus Mark DiStefano.
In some ways, it's the final ignominy for DiStefano, who's had the worst week of his life, finally culminating in losing plank of the week to Emma Thompson, Natty McPhee.
Absolutely. Everything he touches now. Yeah,
he can't get anything, you know, the man that can't get anything right. Well, listen, guys, thank you so much. Very enjoyable. One of the funniest planks of the week I think we've ever done. Emily Garber and, of course, Patrick Christie's. The plank of the week is, this week, Emma Thompson. Congratulations, Emma.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.